The year is 2012, and Emily Dickinson has traveled far away from her home in Amherst, Massachusetts. In the year 1863, she is in the company of the infamous billionaire, the mysterious Mr. Jackington. Emily and her host have just arrived in a room high up in his castle after attending the opening ceremony for the 2012 Summer Olympics in London. The scene opens as they are sitting down to take tea.
How do you like your tea, dear?
As sweet as a field of clover overrun with bees.
With 8 spoons of sugar, I see. How does one take so much sweetness and maintain one's careful figure?
Oh, don't tell me. They've discovered sugar increases one's mass. Oh, honestly, they have, haven't they?
I suppose I can tell you that much. As for the rest, it's best you don't learn too much too soon. It might be a bit hard to take all at once.
I imagine it might. Oh, but I want to know everything. I want to know about trains and when we learned how to fly, and all about those carriages without horses and how everyone dies.
Slow down a bit, for heaven's sake.
And heaven? Have we cracked that yet? Does prayer actually save us? Or is it medicine that makes us whole? What has science shown us? Do we know the truth about God?
Well, people are still fighting wars over that one, I'm afraid.
Oh. And the war! I had foolishly forgotten it in all my excitement. How did we come through the war?
Which war, dear? I'm sorry, there's been so very many. You must mean the American Civil War.
Is that the name history gave it? Such an immortal curse. I always wondered how history would remember the battle for the rights of all men. Civil. What a funny word to describe any war. But what happened? Did we prevail?
I think it would please you to learn that all men and women now have equal rights. And, in other words, all Americans have the right to vote in all elections.
When did that happen? I'm so delighted to hear it. I knew it wouldn't happen in my lifetime, but to be in a time where it's truth, it warms my heart so it might burst.
Oh, you're quick. So many insightful questions all at once. But as I've said, you'll want to ease into this world slowly. Too much too fast could be, well, quite overwhelming.
I can't calm myself. All the things I've seen, everything moves so fast, I can't imagine I'll ever catch up if I don't learn it all now.
You're a bit more energetic than I'd expected. I thought, poet, I'll be stuck hearing a lot of whinging about the cruelty of the world. My dear, you're not one bit what I expected.
I suppose your clever history books have gotten me wrong, then.
Well, literature, anyway. You're famous for being a joyless recluse who barely left her bedroom, but who managed to write quite a volume of poetry in a lifetime, as well as letters asking if her verse was alive.
If my verse was alive, that's like one letter I wrote in the midst of many. So when are you going to tell me how I die? Or do the history books speak of my sudden disappearance as though I'd run off into the woods in an emotional poetic fit and likely drown the demons in my feeble little poet's mind?
I can't speak of any of that, of course.
I hadn't figured that you would. But if it isn't too much trouble, you could tell me why you're distracting me now with a glittering future. I mean, what am I doing here at all?
Oh, smart as well. I didn't actually rely on that. Brains don't exactly come to mind when one says, bring me a poet. The last guy was a basketball player.
Yes. Flattery and confusion. Flattery, please insult me with more of that. What do you call it when you compliment someone, but the complimentary phrase is shrouded in unkindness? Does your precious future have a name for that?
Yes, it is known as the backhanded compliment.
Of course. Such simplicity in the future's divine sensibilities. Watch how it sparkles at a distance.
I'm afraid you've lost me.
Well, I should think it is I who should be afraid of the real reasons you've dragged me out of my garden. What might such a brilliant future care for such a low creature as a poet?
Ah, yes. I suppose I should explain that.
Please do.
If you'll not interrupt. I've taken a contract to pull historical figures such as yourself from the depths of time. We do some meet and greets, you shake some hands, write some autographs, and you get to see all that future has to offer.
And you permit me to stay here?
At my lovely castle, overlooking this of the vast and fertile lands.
Fertile lands. I didn't see any farmlands. Sorry, no interruptions, you said.
Indeed. While you're under contract, which you signed without question this morning, you live under this roof. You are expected to attend conferences and autograph sessions as you get them in your daily agenda.
Daily agenda. I know you said no interruptions, but we've just been talking about the Civil War and basic human rights, and if I'm hearing your words, sir, you are condemning me to slavery.
Ah, it's not slavery. It's a contract, which you did sign.
Ah, words, your funny words, always standing in for each other at the worst moments, like love when you mean hate, or love when you mean, hey, little sister, or best friend when you mean enemy. Don't you shine your future words at me, tell me I am free, and that I must do as some daily agenda dictates. Does it tell me when I'm to retire at night, when I'm permitted meals, when I'm to excuse myself to take care of things we must never speak of, Emily, for it's not proper in this house or any other. I want you to take me home now. I demand it.
You signed the contract. It must be fulfilled.
And you've tricked me, and I will not sit here demure like a good little girl, Miss Emily, and attend to my daily agenda like it's what I'm meant for. You can't take my life away from me. You can't tell me what to goddamn do!
You'll have your own life. It certainly won't be as bad as you imagine.
You leave me. You leave me to this room with bars on its windows. Don't think that had escaped my observation. I'll not leave this place without a fuss, and if you so much as touch me, I shall scream until you've killed me, or you'll find me floating in whatever serves as a moat here.
I think you're being a bit disagreeable. Now, if you would just listen.
Out, out, now! I will not cooperate. I would rather die here in your future.
Mr. Jackington retires to his study while Emily pouts in the tower that he chose for her bedroom, knowing of her adoration for writing in the highest place in her home. After a few moments, the butler slides some paper and a pen under the door. Emily frowns, then retrieves it. She sits at the desk and writes frantically, a letter to her dear friend Susan, whom she knows will never read it. The end.